Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Sonova Cantrell. Today I have an interesting co-host with us. We're going to be going over the strange death of Janice Wilhelm. Today we have a co-host named Anthony Hootie Russo, an ex-Gambino associate. Thank you for joining us, Hootie. How are you?
Well, thank you for the invite. I'm very excited about this new series for myself.
Good, good. Well, we're glad to have you. I thought that you could give us a little bit of a different insight into things just because of your past. And I have insight on things from my study, but I haven't lived it. So sometimes you can see things a little differently than I can. So today we're talking about the case of Janice Wilhelm. Now, Janice Wilhelm was a mother of two. She died on December 10th, 2010, I believe. And today we're going to be talking about her death. She, it's classed as a suicide, even though her family, her kids, all believe that she was murdered. We have a lot of evidence that points to maybe that this case should be investigated a little more. And I flat out believe that this was a homicide. So we're going to go into it. Janice Wilhelm was shot in the neck from a back to front angle. It was right behind the ear, and it went down and it cut through her seventh vertebrae. So it would have paralyzed her immediately. Now, this is someone who she was sleeping in her recliner, and she had one of those crocheted, I think it's what you call them, crocheted yarn blanket things, and she had her hands tucked under it. So the very first question that we ask is, how did she get her hands back under there if she had shot herself and was immediately incapacitated? Now, the gun itself was a Bersa handgun, and it was found 6 feet away in front of the couch facing the other direction. The bullet casing was about the same distance, but it was behind the couch. So there's all kinds of little odd things, even if you didn't know the story about Janice Wilhelm. We're going to talk first with Hootie about his idea, his concept, his opinions on the fact that, for one, the law enforcement never did compare the ballistics. So we don't know for sure that the bullet that was found in her body matches the gun. Not only that, but the bullets that were left in the gun were not the same kind as the bullet casing that was found behind the couch. And of course, it wasn't ever compared to the one found in the victim's body. Then we can go over the ballistics for a while, and then Hootie, I'd like to talk to you about your opinion on the 911 call given by Gerald Wilhelm. So Hootie, what's your opinion on the ballistics in this case after you've studied it for a little while?
Well, I got to study it for the last week or so, and I just keep going over it and over it, and I got the same result from the first time I watched it. It's BS. I don't care what anybody says, what anybody tells you, that woman was executed. Bottom line, changing the ammunition in the gun was trying to fool somebody. This was an amateur hit. This wasn't thought through properly. It was probably thought through, but not properly. Somebody wanted to kill this woman. She did not want to die. They used the excuse because her father, supposedly another mysterious suicide. So they would use that as that she had suicide tendencies or was in, you know, mental health, which she was a nurse. And nurses can cope with mental health, and they know the type of, you know, help to get. And it was BS. I mean, I can look at it from where the crime scene photos. Wow. If you're shot in the back of the head, and where she was shot is execution style, where most gangland hits, if someone's sitting in the back of the car, that's exactly the spot that you would shoot somebody, because that, and it's usually with a small caliber gun, because it makes sure that it bounces around and it kills you, because with a large caliber gun can actually go through and you could be paralyzed, as if she didn't die, she would have been paralyzed where she was hit. And where the gun was located, I don't even care how much backfire that gun had, could never land in that direction. From where she was shot and where she was sitting, the gun would have landed maybe 6 feet away in the opposite direction where the gun was found in the crime scene photos. Now, somebody turned around and put two different caliber bullets inside one pistol. Now, this is Texas. Let's not get it twisted. You could walk into a five and dime store and buy ammunition. There wasn't no shortage on ammunition in Texas. So it wasn't this gangbanger looking to throw ammunition into a gun and do a hit. This person was executed. It wasn't planned correctly. And they knew that this wouldn't be investigated or that this county didn't have the resources. They thought it through, but they didn't think it through well enough. And as we all know, and you can know this from movies, but watching the ID channel, watching how people kill themselves, watching an execution, there's always a flame or a burn mark when someone is shot in the back of the head from a close range. And there wasn't any. Therefore, someone snuck up on her and put one in the back of her skull. That's exactly what happened. And it doesn't make any sense because there was no signs of this from her children, from her neighbors, from anybody else that she had these issues. Workplace, she was a nurse. She has an oath. You have to understand, when you become a doctor or a nurse, you take this oath to help and only help. Yes, the stressful job of first responders and police, and some people commit suicide, and the job of helping people that are dying. This was a woman who wanted to live life just by her hoarding, because she was known to be a hoarder. You know, this isn't a woman who's looking to leave the earth when she did. And like I said, there was no ballistic stating there was a burn mark, which there wasn't from my understanding, or anything from a close range shot that would have left a mark. And there was no gunpowder residue on this woman's arm. And this was her weak side. So now, being her weak side and where she was shot, the gun would have definitely not. Now, let's not even take the fact that maybe if she was strong and it wasn't her weak side, the gun would have definitely not fell in the direction that it did. And this is just, I mean, you could go on TV and watch this stuff on episodes, but knowing how crime scenes are and how they're found, this was a staged. Listen to me when I say a staged suicide. Mm-hmm. By all means, and let's put it the right way. The gun was a large caliber gun, not a small pistol. She would have put the gun in her mouth and killed herself. If that's what she wanted to do, she would have did it in the bathroom. Maybe she would have went in the bedroom. She wouldn't have did it while she was crocheting. It would have been a full setup where the crocheting would have been put away. The blanket would have been put away. What did she need to stay warm for? She was setting herself up to kill herself. None of it adds up. None of it makes any mistakes. And you know what? This is a typical small town murder that certain law enforcement will walk in and say, this is above our pay grade. Let's see what the medical examiner says. Then they send some guy in without even having a GED that's took an online course that looks at it and goes, what do you want me to do? I can't even cut this body open because I don't have the skill and I don't have the ability to do this. Right. But nobody that possibility that it was no gunpowder residue anywhere on this woman.
Now, here's the next thing that is disturbing to the family. At first, they were told that there was no gunshot residue test done. And then when they finally did get the autopsy report and the medical examiner's report, it mentions a gunshot residue test. And when they finally subpoena it, they get told that they must have lost it between the Dallas Medical Examiner's Office and the sheriff's station. It must have got lost. Now, what's disturbing even more is the fact that that was on Janice's hands. They never touched Gerald's hands. As soon as he mentioned this is a suicide on that 911 call, he controlled the narrative from then on. It's like every report says suicide, suicide. They don't even say suspected suicide. They say what type of incident? Suicide. And so it's like he's controlling the narrative of the story from the very phone call on. And you have to have ballistics on both.
Just one quick observation. That's done in New York City. The first suspects is the husband or the boyfriend. And they will investigate. They will focus. They will put him as a person of interest until the last day that case is closed and solved, no matter how many years it takes. Right. And we've seen this in many other cases. Why this wasn't done in this town, I have no idea.
I don't either. That's what's so disturbing. We don't know why it wasn't conducted properly, you know, and we can give them the benefit of the doubt saying maybe they lack the funding, they lack the training, they, you know, whatever the excuse may be. The family was told, if you see me looking this way, it's because my notes are over here. The family was told that unless they could bring more evidence, this case will stay filed as suicide. Now, we have a lot more evidence to come up. And so we've talked about the ballistics. The bullets weren't the same, which is very odd. I was raised by a member of the NRA, you know, so we had guns everywhere. We knew how to handle them. We knew how to use them properly. You know, we showed them respect. We didn't goof around with them. You know, I was raised by hunter, you know, so life was very precious. And if you took an animal, it was because you were going to eat it. You wasn't supposed to take a life unless it was to save your life or to eat. It was like the rule of the jungle. You kill to keep from being eaten or to eat, and that's it. There's no other excuse. You know, that was the way we were raised. But I can tell you from all of that experience, we never, ever, ever put two different types of ammunition in one gun at the same time. Never, never, never. So that is my unprofessional opinion. So why that was different, I don't know. That always bothered me. And then just the fact they never proved that the bullet that killed her came from that Versa. And then it's 6 feet away. You know, if she had done this sitting down, it would have fallen right down beside her in the chair. Or it may have fallen down between the chair and that end table with all of her the little stuff on it, and may have been half underneath the edge of the chair or something. It wouldn't have been thrown 6 feet away facing the other wall. And so that's just, to me, it doesn't make sense. But we kind of mentioned the fact that that was her weak side. So I'm going to go into detail about that wasn't just the hand she didn't use. So it's not just her non-dominant side. It was her dominant side, but she had a very extensive surgery that crippled her from then on. And it had been, I don't know, 7 or 8 years before this happened. So when you don't use a body part, it begins to atrophy, okay? So she had an arm still there after the surgery, but it all began to atrophy to where it just wasn't able to be used. I mean, she could kind of do stuff with her hand as long as it was down in her lap, but she couldn't do stuff at chest level. There's some evidence that she actually called and made arrangements with her postman because unless Gerald was going to be home to check the mail, she couldn't lift her arm enough to get to the back of the mailbox. Okay, so we're talking, you know, we're talking basic physics, how things work together. You know, mechanics, anybody that deals with any kind of mechanics whatsoever, you know, you have to have pulleys and levers. You have to have certain devices that work together to make things work. Or your arm is the same. Well, 7 years or 8 years before she died, we'll just say that, she had a tumor removed that was the size of an orange or a grapefruit. And in her bicep, that's where it was removed. Well, to save her life and to remove that tumor, they had to take a lot of the ligaments and soft tissue. She still had the bone there. But anybody knows you have to have the ligaments and the tissue to be able to pull your arm up, okay? So this is missing, okay? So she's alive. She's got this, you know, she's got the scars and everything to prove it. And I say that because we're going to go over Gerald's 138-page signed deposition. And he's been married to this woman for years, and he doesn't know where the scar came from. So, and I say that.
I would just like to touch on a few things before that.
Hold on, sarcasm there. Okay, you jump in. I'm going to take a sip of coffee.
Well, I was just looking to go get my Pellegrino. well, now, this is the South. This is Texas. Guns are given out like pocket knives in Florida. Pocket knives in the ghetto, whatever you want to call it, right? And now, she wasn't a woman known to be used guns. She wasn't known to be around guns. Now, everybody knows a man and his guns get locked away, not put around the wife. One, they don't want the wife accidentally hurting herself. And two, men do not want their wives touching their guns. Not in Texas. Yeah. So for her to have his gun is so out of whack that how aren't they putting these pieces together when I can?
Right.
The next criminal.
Well, he says in the 911 call, which we'll go over that, that she had said something about she couldn't get her pain medicine, so she just wanted to end it all. And then he, supposedly, if he had heard this, he also allowed her to have a loaded 45 in her lap when they went and decided to take their nap that day. You know, if my loved one was having suicidal tendencies, the very last thing I do, I'd be shipping all the guns out of the house. You know what I mean? I wouldn't be providing them with an opportunity. You know what I mean? I'd be getting them help. I would be, you know, getting them counseling, and I would make sure every harmful device, I would be baby proofing my house like I did when I had toddlers, you know, because I wouldn't want them to follow through on these things. That kind of gives you their relationship right there.
Just being in the family that her father had done this. From the first day I met this woman, I'd make sure all my guns were locked away.
Yeah.
And she was a big believer in not using weapons. Mm-hmm. Why would she all of a sudden have a weapon that belonged to him? And from my understanding, he did have a gun safe. He had a place to lock the guns away. So why would she even know about this if she had nothing to do with guns and didn't want anything to do with guns?
Right.
It doesn't matter. The direction of the gun
landed
in the totally wrong direction from where she was shot. And anybody can take the pistol after it's been shot and rub it on her hands. And then a medical examiner without that much experience could just say, she's got gun residue on her hand. No. Let's check up their arms. When you fire a pistol, the gunpowder residue will fly up your arm and all over your hand. Everybody knows this from watching Law and Order. Forget about anything else. You can watch TV and know this stuff happens. And they probably just went along with, they took the gun, they rubbed it in the hand, and they dropped the gun in the wrong place, panicking to get out of there.
Because
the body, when it was finally found, had been dead for a while. That's another red flag.
Right. It's been said that the blood was coagulated under the edge of her chair. And if that was the case, it wouldn't have been 20 minutes later. You know what I mean? The cops arrived 20 minutes later. It wouldn't do that in 20 minutes. Now, so if that's the case.
Tell them what caliber the gun was.
It was a 45 Versa.
And that didn't wake him up sleeping next to her?
Right.
45 caliber.
It's a 45 caliber Versa Thunder.
Okay. And that didn't wake him up to call the cops at the time, saying that the body's been sitting there dead because he didn't hear the gunshot?
Right. And so that doesn't make any sense right there. So I have the 911 call transcript, and I can, I will paste it into this video and the audio part for the podcast. Right. That way.
Make sure the audio is in there so people who know can listen to how he went from calm to when the 911 operator started asking him questions. To a very fast anxiety, very fast panic attack.
Right. It wasn't anxiety at the beginning.
Right.
No. It was when she started questioning things.
Calm and collective, like he's been sitting there planning this out before he made this call with whoever helped him do this. And then when questioning started, he didn't expect it from a 911 operator. He expected it from an investigator. So she blindsided him with those questions. And it went from anxiety to panic. Where did that come from? When he was cool, calm, and collective. And how cool, calm, and collective are you when your wife just died?
Right. You know, and I realized there's people that handle grief differently. You know, there's people in you know, some of the guys in my family, they're very closed off when it comes to emotional stuff. But you can still tell that they're freaking out on the inside. They're just not going to say it. You know what I mean? You can still hear it in their voice. You can see it in their eyes, but they're just holding it together, you know? But they don't, there's none of that here. I have the 911 call here. Let's see if we can hang on.
Well, so I can tell you this. I'm very closed off.
Yeah.
My mother died in 91, and I can count on my hand how many times I've cried since.
Yeah.
I can tell you this. My loved one dies next to me. There's no way. I don't care how closed off I am. Those are emotions that you cannot hide.
Right.
And I'm very closed off to any type of feelings after losing my parents. And I've lost friends. And I wasn't able to close it off. and I'm a closed off person.
Right.
Oh,
well, that's
BS.
Doesn't make sense to me. Just the shock of hearing that right next to you would be enough if you just woke up to be like, rattled a little bit.
Spook you. That alone. And he was just cool. And we could play it now for them so they can hear it themselves. Yeah.
All right, we're going to play, we'll just play part of it because this man rattles on for almost 6 minutes. So I'll play the important part for you. Here we go.
Well, I live, I don't live my thing.
Yeah.
I think my wife just shot herself.
You think she shot herself?
I do. I sat in her chair asleep and I heard a big bang. I woke up and she got blood running out of her neck.
I'm sorry, what was around her neck, sir?
What?
What was around her neck?
I said she's got blood coming out of her neck.
Okay, sir. I'll be happy to get an ambulance and officer out there. Where your address I'm showing is at 7225 FM 1119.
Yeah.
Okay, so he goes on. That's just 40 seconds of a six-minute call. We could waste a whole 6 minutes and let you listen to it, but I'll put a link to where you can listen to the whole call. It's actually on YouTube. He spends the next, that was 40 seconds of a 6 minute call. He spends the next, five minutes, 20 seconds, whatever. He spends the next 5 minutes just telling her how to get to the house. He doesn't go into, you know, any major detail. He doesn't, you know, anything like that. He tells them, he thinks that she did this because she was out of pain medicine. He thinks that, they couldn't afford the medication anymore because the drug companies wasn't going to pay for it. And then he just basically, he lays out his excuse of why he believes she killed herself. And then he just goes into directions on how to get to his house. I'm like, I wouldn't know how to give you directions. I'd be like, use your satellite. I don't know. Just get here.
What would you just show them? Did that sound like a man whose wife just died?
Yeah.
This is your wife, not a friend. Not an acquaintance, your wife, the woman that you're spending the rest of your life with and hopefully in the next life as well, right? And then how could you, the big sign, the big show, she's a nurse. If she's out of medication, she's friends with doctors. She's friends with other nurses. She's friends with nurse practitioners that can write medication for her. Listen, I've dealt with, when I had to get antibiotics, when I had an upper respiratory infection and I couldn't afford it because I didn't have insurance and doctors and nurses and pharmacists showed me ways to get the antibiotics that I needed without even paying that much. So I don't, that is like, how do you even say that when the person that just killed himself is in the field of medicine? Makes no sense whatsoever.
She had retired just before she had gotten that surgery. So she'd been out of the game for a while, but she still had all those same tendencies. And we'll get into talking about that in a little bit because you'll see that she's still a born and bred nurse because she keeps complete nursing notes on when she takes her medication, on what the symptoms were, how her pain levels are. She takes notebooks full of these notes like she did when she was working at the hospital. And so she still got that ingrained in her. And you can't tell me she didn't know about all the programs and things available. So like I said, I'll put a link to that call so you can listen to all 6 minutes. We're not going to waste a whole 6 minutes to listen to him give directions. But one, you'd have to notice how extremely calm he is. That is unusual. I don't know anybody, no matter how closed off they are, that's not going to at least be a little rattled to be sleeping and then hear a gunshot 2 foot from their ear. You know, it's loud. I mean, people think, oh, it's not that big deal. They hear in the movies, pop, pop, pop. Well, a burst of going off inside a house 2 foot from you is going to rattle you just a little bit. I don't care who you are. And so you've got to, you got to take that into account. So that's odd. We'll just leave that there. We don't know why he would allow her to have a gun and allow her to sleep next to him with it loaded. You know, all that goes into, I think it speaks volumes at what their relationship really was. Besides the fact that he had kind of over the time isolated her from other existence, you know, he kept her away from all of the social stuff. He kept her kids at bay. He kept the family at bay. This is signs of a predator, if you ask me, you know, because I don't care what your reasonings are. When you start isolating somebody from the world, there's a reason for it. There's a reason why he isolated her from everyone else. It's easier, and this is very crude, it's easier to dispose of somebody if they have no connections. It's just plain and simple. That's just logic. And so we'll let that go for now, but we're going to talk about, in this call, he talks about they couldn't afford their medications. Now, he says they had been out for a while, and they couldn't afford it. And she has found the fact that she has found that not only did the mother have these pain medications in her system at the time of her death, it was in the toxicology report. She wasn't out because she still had them in her system. She found that next to her in the chair, which we will share the crime scene photos, next to her table is real cluttered. It has her pain medication right there, and the bottle still had some in it. She also found a receipt. She had signed up for a program. Her daughter helped her with a lot of these paperwork things ever since she hurt her arm. So her daughter helped her with some financial statements and stuff like that. Well, her daughter actually knew that this was wrong because her daughter helped her sign up for a supplemental program that not only helped get them paid for, she paid $5 a month for this program. That's it. So $5. But then she was on disability, so the rest of it was paid for. And then that also included a delivery service. So Janice didn't have to even go to town to get all of her medications. Some of them she did, but some of them were actually delivered. So she not only in her investigation, you know, during her grief, she found that her mother had it in her system. Her mother had it on the table next to her. And there was a receipt where some more had just been delivered. So that whole concept of they couldn't afford their medication was bull. Because all of it's still there. Now, that makes me question something else. Now, if you follow any kind of true crime shows or whatever, they quote the health department and all this stuff. And I don't usually do that, but I looked it up. And women, 90% of the time, now this isn't 20%, 90% of the time, women don't commit suicide with violence. Okay. Men commit suicide with violence. Women commit suicide by falling asleep. She had extra pills right at her right hand. If she wanted to end it all, why didn't she just take them? That would have been a cleaner, neater way to do that. And that's the way usually women think. They don't want to impose any more problems on their family. They may not feel like they can handle life anymore, but they 90% of the time, they will just do something to go to sleep. What is your opinion on that?
100%. That has been known. I've known people that women that have committed suicide, and I don't know one of them that's ever used a firearm. And I don't care if you were from the South or if you were from the East. I don't know. And I've known a lot of suicides. And you know what? I know women that went to the store and bought two bottles of Tylenol aspirin and did it that way. So they can save the trouble.
Right.
Just like you said.
They don't even have to have a prescription.
It's just too many red. If there was one red flag, you can look past it. But now and this man turns, because you have to bag evidence. Everything's evidence. You have to bag everything in that room. Now, this man just said that she ran out of pain medication. The first thing you do, and as an investigator, is call the pharmacy, call the doctor, see what happened with her medication. As soon as they get it back, that no, her medication was fine. She had, and she just got delivered. He becomes a person of interest because that was a lie right there. Why wasn't this man a person of interest? Just off the bat, let's find out why her medication wasn't being delivered and why she didn't have any. Oh, wait, we have it in evidence. She had medication. Oh, wait, we have the paperwork. She just had medication delivered. That's simple investigating.
Right.
Why wasn't this man looked at like every other case where the husband or the boyfriend is always the suspect first?
Right. And the thing is a lot of times they're suspect and just railroaded into the ground to prove that they are the killer and they weren't, you know. In this case, they never even considered. You know, it's just like immediately he controlled the narrative from the beginning. Now, I am looking up something as we're speaking here. I want to get the doctor's name. Now, they had a very famous doctor. He actually, I think his name is DeMayo. I'll have to, I'm waiting for my computer to load the document. They had him double check. They said, okay, they checked the toxicology report. And he said, and it's there. The medication was there. Then they had him go back and check the autopsy. And they had him compare the autopsy. They went to the hospital that did her surgery I can't remember. It was 7 or 8 years before. They went to the hospital, got the medical records of the procedure that was done. They had him compare those medical records to the autopsy report to see if it was possible with someone with that type of an injury to her arm could have done this. Okay, let's see. I pulled it up. His name is Vincent DeMayo. He's in San Antonio, Texas. He's very famous. He's done several different cases, some of them really high profile cases, but I wanted to quote his name right. Vincent DeMayo, he said, I'm not trying to prove that it's suicide or murder. I am just telling you that with someone that's had this surgery, it is nearly impossible for her to even got her arm up there to do this. And he said, it needs to be reinvestigated. He said, this case warrants reinvestigation, you know, because he was an investigator and he probably knew he'd get in trouble if he said, you know, no way, you know, but he said, you know, and you've got this high powered doctor who's done this forensic doctor, and he states this is not possible. Now, they actually had an investigator, a private investigator come in because local law enforcement wouldn't do anything. They say the children have an ulterior motive and that they just won't, they're grieving family that won't accept the truth. And so I would have a hard time accepting this, though. If this was my mother, would you be happy if this was your mother? And all of these questions?
Not if I just got done helping her fill out paperwork for her medication.
Yeah, you know, I'm just like, it doesn't make sense. She was a crafty person. So she was making all kinds of little quilts and things like this. And she has grandchildren. And so she was in the middle of making a craft project for one of her grandkids.
Well, this was one of my points, Sonova. There's a lineup, because I have had people in my family commit suicide. I have friends that commit suicide. Their day is always out of whack. They could say they weren't normal. They weren't in their same routine. This is what happened. That's what happened. This lady went about her day. And I've been sitting since you sent me everything. And then I went online myself and looked at everything. She did nothing out of the ordinary. Nothing. Down to if she was ready to kill herself, she would have not had her grandkids' quilt on her lap.
No.
Did she need to stay warm for?
Right.
What did she need to quilt while preparing to kill herself?
Right.
It's too many red flags now I'm not telling anybody how to do their job, but local law enforcement, if they did not have the resources, should have called in the FBI. Because what we're going to get to, I don't know if it's going to be on this episode or the next, this has a lot to do with oil.
Mm-hmm. It does have a lot to do with oil. So, okay, so we're going to, we've talked about the 911 call. We've talked about that. We've talked about the fact that she didn't have the mechanical equipment in her arm to do this.
Normal. Let's not forget that. And that's not the same with people that are committing suicide. They don't have the normal day, the last day on earth.
They don't. No. And most of the time, and I couldn't find a statistic on the exact percentage I looked for it and I couldn't find it.
On what?
It is very, very rare for someone to commit suicide with one of their loved ones in the room. Have you ever heard of that?
Very rare. It's like a 0.1%.
Yeah, because most of the time they don't want to cause them any more pain. They can't handle life, but they still don't want to cause their loved one pain. They don't want their loved one to find them. They don't want, you know, so they try to hide. They try to, you know, do it when they're gone, you know, send them off to the store and then do it, or, you know, something like that. So that to me is another one of those things. Doesn't make sense.
A great point that you're making. Most people come home, park their car, kill themselves in their car. going to the bathroom, the bathtub, going to the bedroom. They do it in places that they're usually not, because
with someone else,
they're not on their regular schedule.
Right.
So they're not.
She could have went and sat in the car.
Now, if she kills and wanted to just fall asleep in her place of comfort and die, that's a different story.
Oh yeah,
that wasn't it. She would have never taken her life the way she did in her place of comfort.
Yeah, I don't think so.
You are hitting that right on the head with this.
It doesn't make sense. And then for her to have unfinished business, you know, because I have some people in my family that are real crafty like that, and it drives them crazy till they get it done. You know, they can't wait to present their grandkid with this little thing they made. You know, it may not be worth $1 million, but to them, they put their heart and soul into this when they made it, you know, and they can't wait to see their grandkids' eyes light up. To me, the fact that she did this with unfinished projects sitting right next to her for her grandkids, I'm like, I would expect her to finish those first.
Now, you know, pick up as a lady of oath, because she's a lady of oath,
yeah,
a woman of respect, to have had something in her hands that was directed towards her grandchildren when she was going to commit such a heinous thing to herself?
I don't think so. And if you look in those pictures, she's somewhat of a hoarder, so there was stuff everywhere. I've been told that some of those things that you can see on the table behind her are some more projects she had for the kids. So I'm like, why would she have them right there? If she was planning on shooting herself, she's gonna get blood and everything all over her those projects. It doesn't make sense to me. That's not the way any woman I know would think, you know? And I've known a few people, unfortunately, that have taken their lives, and it's never been that way. So we've gone over all these things. We have a 138 page sworn deposition from Gerald Wilhelm. Now, this is something that I found really disturbing, because this was taken, let's see, November 18th, 2015. So this is 5 years after this has happened, about a month shy of being 5 years.
More than enough time to get your story straight with your accomplished.
Exactly. The only reason why this was taken is because we have an issue with the will. Okay. Now, the will that was issued, the children were calling in. They didn't believe that this was suicide. They couldn't believe it. They couldn't understand why. You know, they were going through the grief process, and they call to check on their mother's final, you know, her final arrangements, and they're told she didn't leave a will. The daughter found that interesting, and she called more than once just to double check, make sure everything's in line, her final affairs are in order. And she finds out that 2 months prior to her finding out, was a will was not only probated, but it was approved and sent through. Okay. Now, the daughter is the one that usually helped with the paperwork and stuff. So the daughter knows her mother's handwriting. She knew her handwriting before she got her arm hurt. She knows her handwriting after she got her arm hurt. So she can still sign and do things with her left hand down low, just not up high. So she knows what her mom's signature looks like. She was surprised to find that her mom even had a will. The whole 7 acres that they had was appraised for right around $100,000. It wasn't a huge place. It didn't have a huge house on it. It was just a standard, you know, country home. Well, they take this, and she gets a copy of it. She's like, wait a minute. For one, as her children, we should have been notified that you were going to push us through. For two, you told me there wasn't one. And then she gets this will, and she looks at it. Everyone in Janice's life has been cut out except for Gerald. So everything goes to him. Okay. That's okay. Whatever goes to him. She looks at the bottom. The signature is absolutely not even close to her mother's signature. They say in one of the TV shows that an 8-year-old could have seen the differences. Just down to the main capital J was completely slanted in the opposite direction than than the way she always made her J for Janice. Okay. So they sent this to two different forensic handwriting specialists. And not only did they prove that Janice did not write this, they said that it looked more like the handwriting of Gerald. Okay. So this will has two witnesses' signatures on it. One, we will call her Deborah, just to save face. Deborah signed it and then confessed later that after the kids raised a stink and filed a civil lawsuit, that she didn't see Janice sign it. She just, they said it was her signature and she witnessed it after it was already signed. Okay, so that should make the will null and void, but it didn't. They went ahead and passed it through, even though there was this argument in place. Now, within months of this happening to Janice, within months of Gerald becoming the sole heir of this little property that didn't seem to be worth a whole lot. I mean, it was just a little, you know, you can't raise chickens and make any money, you know, unless you're Tyson's Foods. Yeah. So within a month or two, the whole front yard is taken up and is into an oil well. Now, this oil well is part of a 400 and some odd acre plot. And this oil well, it says the paperwork that they found, it was making $800,000 every 6 months. Okay. That was split between the owners. Okay. Now, Gerald's cut was several tens of thousands of dollars a month. So he went from someone who was living off a disability, supposedly couldn't afford a $5 a month pharmaceutical charge to get his wife's medicine, to making several tens of thousands of dollars a month. What's your opinion on this? Does this look fishy to you?
Fishy. It's 100% shady. There's no fishy. There's no anything about it. And you know what? It brings me to the thought that the investigators on scene, which aren't investigators, first responders, sheriffs, whatever they were, it was above their pay grade and they didn't want the headache of it from powers to be. And I understand that, especially in small town Texas. Now, my whole thing with that is just let's go back a little bit. We're going to reverse a little bit to the will. This was a woman. Now, let's say that she thought her kids didn't deserve nothing, which we know is not true because her and her daughter was close and she had a son, okay? Let's just say that that wasn't okay, that relationship, all right? She was making a quilt for her grandchildren. Do you think this woman wouldn't have left something on her will for those beautiful grandchildren in her eyes to have something in the future? Let's just get back to the will part.
Right.
Now, all right, let's cut the kids out. They're older. Maybe they did some things. Maybe she felt they didn't help her out enough as they should have. Let's go through all of that. You know, what happens when children get older and what happens after that. Mm-hmm. The grandparents love the grandchildren more than they love their own children. It always just seems to work out that way. And now this woman with the crafts that she had on the side and the craft that she was doing at the time of her death, which would have never happened if she was going to kill herself, were for her grandchildren. Mm-hmm. So at least her grandchildren would have been in that will for something, And now all the paperwork that I read, they never did a handwriting test on the husband. They never compared a signed check, signed postal receipt from the UPS, assigned anything to the signature that was on the will.
Right.
Nothing yells suicide. Everything yells cover up and shady with the whole situation.
From the whole thing. Now, the law enforcement, you're right, the law enforcement never compared any signatures. The children had the signatures compared, and one of the handwriting specialists says it looks like Gerald's. But law enforcement, you're right, never compared the signatures. They have never done anything on this. They have still adamantly say to this day that it was suicide, the kids have an agenda, and that they just won't accept the truth. And so this is where I don't care if the kids do have an agenda. I don't care if the kids are grieving and don't want to accept the truth. There's too many holes for it not to be investigated again. Well, so I think it needs to be investigated by someone outside of Leon County.
Well, but let's get back to your earlier statement. Bring us something to investigate and we will. Well, we hired our own handwriting expert and they're telling you this handwriting looks like the husband's. That right there opens a case automatically. So now we brought you something that you asked for. Why isn't there an investigation being done now? Which you can never tell a family, bring us something and we'll investigate it. No, it's your job to go out and find the evidence to investigate it, because the husband, the partner, the boyfriend is always the suspect, which you never make a person of interest, unheard of in any state, except when there is a cover up and something shady going on, which turned out to be the oil well dug in on their property.
That's the thing. When it comes to those oil wells, it's just amazing to me that Janice wouldn't have known that she could have made that kind of income in her state. So it tells me that she either didn't know, or she, you know, maybe refused to join in, because 7 acres isn't enough. She had to have, you know, it had, it was a 400 acre plot. So it makes me wonder, why did she have to die for this? I mean, 10,000, 500,000, whatever, it could have been shared with her, you know? So it makes me wonder if maybe she was holding out, if maybe she didn't know, because that is something she could have done to help make her life easier. So it makes me think she didn't know. I mean, I don't know. I didn't live in the house. I don't know. I can't ask her, obviously. Her kids tend to think that she didn't know, but we have no way of finding out. But it's one of those things where if there was just one question, it would be bad enough.
Well,
and I expect, you know, before I got to be a crime writer, I had this naive notion, you know, and I think Hollywood builds this in your mind, that there's some big, you know, some big investigator is going to come take this to the and run it to the end. There's going to be some, you know, some Wyatt Earp going to come face down hell in itself to get you justice. You know, there's nobody like that.
Well,
that's not the way it works.
It would have been New York. They would have investigated it till they could investigate it. But my whole thing is, I want to touch on that, because that's a big subject. If they would have went through her phone calls, if they would have went through her call logs, like a proper investigation that I could sit here and tell you how it should be conducted and see who she spoke with, I think that she didn't want it. She was okay with being out on disability with her nurse's salary from the state of Texas. She was okay with what she was doing with her hoarding. That's a person that's comfortable with the way she's living. Okay.
Right.
Maybe they brought it to her and she says, you know what? I don't want that oil rig in my front yard. Okay.
But well, then, in that property,
if we can't get to the wife, let's get to the husband. And the husband maybe try to convince her. And she says, you know what? No. When I'm gone and my children or grandchildren decide what they want to do with this, that's up to them. But as long as I'm here, I don't want to hear that noise. I don't want that for tens of thousands of dollars. And they're earning $1.6 million a year off of it. I don't want it. There's already enough oil rigs on this state, in this county or whatever. And then the husband, like any other greedy person, somebody gets in their ear, helps him conspire. Listen, you know what? We can make this look better for you. You don't even have enough money to put gas in your truck.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how things work. Yeah. And anywhere else, this would have been investigated like this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure if you go through her call logs going back a year, you find somebody, a neighbor that needed her, you know, needed her to sign on. Because now we could get into further how she was the only one that wasn't, you know, jumping on this while all the other neighbors were. And there's always that one little piece of land that they need. And it was us.
Right.
He was holding out.
And you also have to remember that this 7 acres was something that was a part of a larger plot of land that had been in her family since the Civil War. Now, when you have some of that kind of history and you have that kind of roots to a piece of land, you can track your family back living on the same piece of land since Civil War times. Money is not as big of an option to you. You know, I mean, if that land means that much to you, I mean, you have that land running through your veins like your blood, that is not something you're going to want to put an oil well in the front yard. You know what I mean? This is a piece of my daddy's legacy. You know, my daddy's gone, but this is a piece of his legacy. So I wouldn't want an oil yard in my front yard either.
So you leave that to somebody without your last name?
Huh?
Leave that to somebody without your name.
Yeah. So it ends up going to somebody, not even hers.
And let me give it to a guy that I met. instead mm-hmm. of my grandchildren that will carry on my name and carry right. with. And I'm sure with a woman like her, she would have put a stipulation into the will that you cannot sell this property. You can only pass right. it on, because that's right. what those type of people do. Passing yeah. on to other generations, because mm-hmm. that's what we have done. So right. there's yeah. nothing, there hasn't been a green flag yet. Everything about this whole case is right. a red flag. And you know what? It may be above me and you. It may yeah. be a senator, a governor. Mm-hmm. Who knows who's involved? There yeah. might have been oil running through the neighbor's property, who was well mm-hmm. connected with the town, well connected mm-hmm. with contributing to somebody's
right.
run for office. Mm-hmm. You don't know.
No, you don't. Because and that's what's so sad. Somebody needs to come in and look at it. Yeah.
More investigation. In today, right. This happened in 2010. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They would have checked her call log. They would have checked who she met with. This is not 1980. It's technology.
Right. You right.
take a guy right. that did something in a park in the middle mm-hmm. of the night because there was a camera set up somewhere. Mm-hmm. We have technology today. Don't make right. a difference. In Backwoods right. Town, Texas. Mm-hmm. It doesn't right. matter.
Right.
They have the ability to find these things out. And none of this stuff. Down to the, bring us something and we'll investigate it. And they didn't even do that. So
right.
this goes.
That's to what's so problem. Aggravating. It's a modern day crime. It's not a crime from the that's 70s. Right.
This is
you know, this is
really easily figured out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'd like to touch on a couple different things I found disturbing in this deposition. I've got it here. There's 138 pages. I found disturbing, and I want to ask you what your opinion is. Yeah, because I just feel like I've studied so many of these. I've written about 300 different cold cases. I see patterns. I mean, you can't write 300 different cases and not see patterns. And so I'm like, I just want to see somebody else's take on this, because maybe I'm seeing a pattern that's not there. You know what I'm saying? Because you do it so many times. And I thought, well, maybe bring in someone that's not doing this for a living, someone that, you know, hasn't written about 300 cases, and maybe see what he has to say. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm not going to go through all of it. Of course, I just made some notes in the margins. First, I'd like to make sure that you realize this was taken after the children's kicked up a fuss. So the children, they kicked up a fuss and did the civil suit because they said the will is forged. Okay. So this was taken as a sworn statement on November 18th, 2015. So just almost 5 years difference. Okay. Now I'm trying to turn here. For one, where did the will come from? That was one thing that came up here. The will was not done and created with an attorney. It was created by software on her computer, and it was created June 10th of 2009. So this was created less than a year before she died, supposedly. That's when it was dated. So that, to me, now, the one witness that we called Debbie, we're going to bring her up again. And yes, I changed her name because we're not necessarily going after her. We're just wanting to tell you the story. Okay?
Of course, we're not looking to use anybody's name to.
No.
Like, we don't.
No.
We can't.
We're just wanting somebody to investigate this.
We just want somebody. We just want to put the information out there to raise the right flag for somebody to right. say, hey, look over here, something's wrong.
We want to raise enough publicity about the case that somebody will step in and be that white knight that's gonna come in and take this case on and say, hey, I'm gonna get you some justice. Because the show's called Chasing Justice. The reason being is because a lot of times the family has to chase it themselves, and the person with the badge hasn't chased it at all. And that's not right.
And listen, I'm probably going to get a lot of heat over this on my platform. Nobody's better than the FBI when it comes to this. And you know what? It's a state issue. It should be a federal issue because of the oil. And I think mm-hmm. they should send somebody down there. And you know what? Mm-hmm. They can sniff out a mouse, a rat. They can sniff out anything. And I think if they paid attention to this, they would find. But maybe they're told not to. Like I said, Who right. knows?
You don't know who it's connected to.
Don't right. know.
Right. Now, this is the first thing that really made me stand out and question. Like I said, this is less than 5 years away. They ask Gerald Wilhelm, do you remember the day she passed away? Do you remember the date of her passing? He says, no, not without looking it up.
Wait, is this somebody you're married to?
Yeah. And she died right next to him.
Every girl I've ever dated, and believe me, that list is long. When my book comes out, you'll see. And I can tell you every birthday of every girl I've ever been with. That is insane for somebody to make a remark like that on the oath.
Right. That was the very first thing. That's on, if you guys could probably get a copy of this. It's on page 19 if you ever want to look it up. Do you recall the date of your passing? No, not exactly, not without looking.
But I really want the listeners at home to listen to that 911 tape. The full
yeah. tape. Yes, definitely. Okay. So they had to say, okay, so we have it down as December 8th, 2010. Does that sound about right? He says, yeah, it was before Christmas, I think.
Wait, now he doesn't even know if it was after Christmas or before Christmas. They don't remember if there's a Christmas tree in the house.
No. So to me, I'm sitting here going, I don't care if you didn't like this person whatsoever. You're asleep, 2 foot away, somebody discharges a gun, you wake up, there's blood everywhere. I work with ex-mob guys. I don't even know any ex-mob guys that wouldn't be a little bit rattled by that. Do you?
I mean, are you kidding
enough
me?
Enough to remember the day?
There's blood dripping down my wife's neck. Now, how would he even know to look there?
I don't know, because is that technically his chair on the other side.
His chair's on the other side.
Yep.
So he had to inspect everything, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that goes back to that statement you made. What did you say earlier that I've never heard of before an investigation? From what they've gathered, this is what they came up with. Something that you said that was very unorthodox to be said in an investigation.
Oh, that the scene was cleared by exception.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about? We don't know. What exception? What does that mean?
You clear the scene, you CSI it, and you inspect it. Bottom line.
Yep. Yep. That's what the police report says for anybody that's looking up documents. It says cleared by exception.
Right. Like any true investigator would look at this and go, who wrote this?
Yeah.
This is a professional. And actually let this paper get out?
Yeah. I don't get it.
That should be fired.
Now, we're going to move from page 19 to 25. In 25, they're asking him when they got married. They got married in 2000. He thinks it was 2000. He wasn't quite sure. And he says, well, you guys had dated before. And he's like, yeah, I think it was back in the 60s. And then he said, when did you meet her again? He said, this blows my mind. I was in the hospital. I had taken my mother up there. She had suffered a stroke. That was his first wife. So he lied right there in a sworn statement. That was not his mother he took to the hospital.
We know that from nothing. We know that.
It was his first wife. He met Janice in 99. She was still working as a nurse. This was before she had had her surgery and got on disability. He met her. And she remembered him from back in high school days, and they started seeing each other before he ever divorced his first wife. And some children of his first wife have come forward and said that, yes, and he divorced her and he took all of her money as well, you know. And so here's the thing though, it doesn't matter how you feel about extramarital affairs. He's not being interviewed by the Pope here. He's being interviewed by an investigator who could give a crap less about his love life. Okay. So why did he lie here? He's just trying to make himself look better than he is. And I'm like, there's no reason to lie to the police that you had an affair with somebody. They don't care. You know, they're not your pastor. They're not going to bless you.
Can't morally charge you.
You know, they're not the moral police. So why did he lie? I don't know. But in this signed sworn deposition, he just wants to make himself look better.
This was a sworn deposition. Am I not mistaken?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. contempt of court. Obstruction of justice.
Right there. Yes.
Which mm-hmm. holds a felony.
Yep. Yeah, it does. So I'm sitting here.
Forget about lies. Why wasn't this man charged with lying under oath?
Right. So there's so many things that just, it doesn't make any sense.
We need somebody to get this investigation. We need somebody to read this deposition and at least bring this man up on obstruction of justice and lying in a deposition.
Right.
At the minimum, we need that.
Right. So now, we will go
right
through
with this. We really do need to reach the right people with this.
Right, we do. And this is the reason why I take on cases like this, because somebody's got to kick up enough of a stink to get them to go ahead and do their job, which is terrible. They get paid by our tax dollars to do their job.
Right? You light a fire under one guy, information starts being burned. Let's light a fire under this guy. Now he loses his money because we're going to put him in jail.
Well, that's the thing. We can't light a fire under Gerald because Gerald mysteriously died. but we can light a fire under the investigators to get them to do something.
This was something that should have been taken care of when they feel that he lied in a deposition.
Oh,
not today, of course, because we
can't do nothing about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to skip on over closer to the end of the deposition. It's not that I don't have more, but I could literally spend hours here talking to you about all the lies in this deposition. But they bring up a very good point in this deposition. They bring up a very good point that wasn't brought up in the crime scene photos. Now, at this point in time, she was still recovering. She had fell and broken her leg, and it was 2 years before, and she had healed as good as she was going to. But since then, she had to have a cane or a walker just to get out of her chair. Okay. If you look, that cane was moved over to the other side of the couch, past where the gun landed. So this guy actually asks him, he says, who moved her cane? If she sat down in that chair, she would have had her cane with her. And he says, yes. He said, so who moved her cane? He's like, I didn't touch it. Who did? If she can't get up without the cane, she can't get out of the chair without the cane. It would have been right there beside her.
Correct.
It wasn't. It was on the other end of the couch. So that is another question that I thought this guy did a good job interviewing, because I'm like, that is another little thing in those crime scene photos that doesn't make sense. Now, right, I'm going to give you guys
the job that he did, that he didn't bring it to the authorities' attention to have this man arrested for obstruction of justice.
This was in the middle of a civil suit. So he's being interviewed under oath by attorneys, with his attorney and their attorney there.
It's still
and a yeah, it is. And the thing is nothing was really done about it. And this is what's so aggravating. Now, we're going to go skip on to the end, because like I said, I could spend hours. I've actually been working on this case and writing about this case for 2 years. I mean, I have written about it the very first time was 2 years ago. So I've studied this stuff like crazy. Okay, he asked Gerald, okay, it's been 5 years. What happened to her belongings? What happened to her personal effects? He doesn't know. He got rid of them. What happened to her computer? Because that would be something that you could look on and see, you know, some information. He got rid of it.
These are things that should have been bagged and put into evidence.
Right. They should have been in an evidence locker somewhere.
With they've only taken certain things under certain suggestion.
Right. Well, he decides he didn't have any use for the computer. He says he couldn't use the computer, so he just got rid of it. Okay. So who did he get rid of it to? Somebody, he's not sure. Okay. Now, if you followed this case all the way through, it was the story was broke by NBC in 2015. Okay. Just after this deposition was taken. 2015, NBC breaks the story. It goes out on the news. Now, Gerald steps out on his porch to talk to the investigator, the reporter. He doesn't say anything of note. But he does admit that there's a civil suit going on. He walks back into the house. Within a few days, they find him dead in the house. Okay. They say that he died of a heart attack. There was no autopsy done. And he was cremated before anybody could find out what happened to him. Okay. So to me, he stepped out and presented himself in front of the public. Obviously, he shouldn't have done that because within a few days, he was gone.
Well, let's get to this. The person that everything got left to was a lawyer. Now, this lawyer knows he lied in a deposition. He lied in civil court. He lied to the detectives. You know what? Somebody's going to bring that to light. So what do you do?
Well,
you get rid of the garbage.
The person that it was left to was...
You get rid of the
yeah. The person that it was left to wasn't an attorney. She was a banker.
A banker. Okay. I thought it was an attorney.
No, they were working with some attorneys. Yeah.
Because when I listened to it, it didn't necessarily say it was the banker because there was bankers and lawyers. It was
a farmhand.
And it got left to a farmhand. That was my next thing. So it was a banker and a farmhand, but there was a lawyer involved.
Yes.
So I didn't know all three.
There is a lawyer that's related to this case. Let's just put it that way.
And that person can get the information saying, hey, he's screwing up on us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, here's what's so crazy. Who got the farm when Gerald died? It was another homemade job, mm-hmm. Which is fine, but it makes it hard to prove because there's no third person witness to create this document for you. So there's another will. It's pushed through and probated, even though the very first will was still being fought over. See, that will is still being fought over. So legally, that property should be tied up in probate till kingdom come. It's not. It went ahead and was sent through. The second will, based on a so-called forged will, I have to say so-called because it's still in court. The second will is probated and sent through, and everything's left to a farmhand and a little banker down the street. Now, this little banker, so-called,
there's a lawyer's involvement. Let's not forget where the lawyer's involvement, because that's where the advisement's coming from.
This banker gets the property, gets the oil rights. The property is left to Miss Debbie, who didn't actually witness the signature but signed. Okay, so that in itself looks weird.
Maybe this was a person who botched a notary witnessing.
Yeah. So she was the witness on the will that's being contested. Now she has the property, her and a farmhand. And then guess who gets the oil rights? It's this little banker. Now this little banker, there's a rumor that she could be a distant cousin related this way or that way. All I know is she wasn't actively involved in Janice's life, but somehow she ends up with everything. But let me tell you something else that really makes it stink really bad. This woman got all of Janice's jewelry too. Gerald said, oh, I don't need it. Gave it all to the pretty little banker down the street. And then when he died a few years later, he gave her all the oil rights too.
So and puts the farmhand as the face of it.
Yeah. So you got the farmhand, the lady that botched the signature, the witness signature, and then you've got the banker. Now, what's really crazy, we all know who the banker is. I'm not saying it just because I'm going to save my own neck here. But this is the last thing I'm going to say in this sworn deposition on page 124. It says, and how would we be able to find these items or photos of these items to figure out the value? They're asking, you gave all of Janice's jewelry and belongings to this woman. How will we find out how much it was? Because technically that's Janice's estate and they were supposed to have a value given to them and assigned before it was probated and gave to the other person. That's the way the law is supposed to go. That was never done. He's like, here's all Janice's stuff. Okay. He says, I don't know. Like I say, I don't want to get her involved in it. And he refuses to give her name in this sworn statement.
Which you can't do, because you're granted immunity or you're granted that you have to speak about everything that you're asked, or you can be held in contempt as usual. That's the way it works.
So he's willing to give her his wife's jewelry. He's willing to give her all of her personal items. He's willing to, when he dies, to give her his oil rights. And everybody in the county knows who this person is. And yet he doesn't want to say her name in a sworn statement.
Well, we all know who she is. It's just that we can't say it because defamation. We can't.
Right. So this is why this is the last thing that I really want to question in this, because if there wasn't anything to hide, if this was all legitimate and he just gave it to this woman because she's a distant cousin, why not say it? If I'm going to give somebody something, I don't have anything to hide. So I don't care if the Pope comes over to my house and says, who'd you give this to? I'll be like, so-and-so. What's their address? I'll give it to you. I didn't give them anything illegal. I didn't do anything illegal. You don't have to hide if you didn't do something wrong in the first place. Well, and so this is where I am.
Let me give you from an ex-street guy's perspective, right?
Yep.
Where did the rights, the oil, and the land end up? Where it started.
Yeah.
Whole shenanigans with the woman who said she witnessed the signature that she did it. So there was a deal made there that if you say you witnessed this, if you put your name on the line for this, for us, at the end of the day, it's all said and done. It will all eventually be in your name. Mm-hmm. I mean, if people can't see that, and this is regular law and order ID channel stuff. I don't got to sit here and tell you this as an ex-organized crime member. This is telling you as common sense. It all came full circle back to the woman who put her neck on the line. Because when you look at it, it's only her neck on the line. And you know what? She's still alive. So we can get this out of her. Like, if it's still in probate that this should belong to the children, this all should have went back to the children. They could take this back into court to that original signature that she didn't witness, and this whole thing should be thrown out.
Right. And they decide that's what they're fighting for.
And but any good law enforcement, which the red tape, there's a lot to get through. Any good law enforcement, any good investigator, and any legitimate judge will go in the favor of the family and say this woman actually should lose her notary, whatever license she had. Because what she did is totally illegal, and it came full circle that it's back and all of it's us. That's like what they call in the world of anything else, common interest. Common interest. It's all common interest here.
Right. And that's what's so disturbing. We have not just seen part of the case. We have seen the entire case play out completely over the past decade or so. We have seen it play all the way out to the payout of the job that originated the case.
Stanova, I was on 3 days of no sleep last week. When you gave this information, I made sure I got enough sleep every day to wake up and study this case. Because from the first sentence, I couldn't imagine that this was real. I feel like I was reading a fake screenplay. I'm like, wait, did some 8-year-old write this for a talent show? Because what law enforcement would let this happen?
Right.
Well, the first read that you sent me, none of it makes sense.
Mm-mm. No, Hollywood couldn't come up with a better storyline. They really couldn't.
Because you would watch the movie halfway through, you go, this movie stinks. Anybody could see that this whole mess was fake.
Right.
It's all made up. How can this be real? Mm-hmm. And that's what I did this whole week. Studying this case.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe what I came up with in 5 days.
Yeah. Well, anybody who can see it from beginning to end. Now, we'll close things up, but I want to let you guys know Janice wasn't the first. And that's what's really scary about this. Her father was killed under suspicious circumstances. His neighbor, who was questioning his death, was killed under suspicious circumstances. If you count in that area, there were 5 or 6 strange deaths that have questions about them still lingering in that same area. And that's what's so scary. This isn't the only case that has been let go and everybody's just shutting it down. If this was my mother, if this was your mother, I would ask you whether you were on good terms with your mother or not. Would you not fight for answers to all these questions we have raised? I mean, I don't know anybody that wouldn't. I don't care if you were on bad terms with your mother. It's your mother. And there's too many questions in this case. I would be fighting, wanting answers.
Sonoma, you know what was the first thing I said to myself after the third episode?
What?
how come these haven't been the people that have been investigating me all these years? I'd still be in the life. I'd be a multimillionaire and I'd be running wild.
Because he would be living off some exotic beach somewhere.
One lie in the deposition, they'd put me away for 5 years.
Yeah, it'd be like, you'd be off on some exotic beach.
Oh my God, I can't believe this. Like the first case you hand me, I had it done, solved in 72 hours. I couldn't wait to get up the next day and read this again and watch these episodes over again. It's like, can somebody pay attention to what I'm paying attention to?
Yeah, so that's what we're doing. That's the reason why I started Chasing Justice. This is one family that I've worked with. I have literally written 300 cases, and so many of them, the family still doesn't have justice, or the family has fought for decades to get it themselves. And I think in this free country that we have, it doesn't matter what race, what creed, what color you are, whether you're pink, purple, or yellow polka dots, you deserve to have justice when something like this happens to your family. And we believe in this country that life is valuable. And when you take it, you should have to pay for it. And I know this kind of goes up the wrong alley, you know, because we're talking to an ex-street guy here. But, you know, this is the thing. Even the mafia, which I know he doesn't call it the mafia, even La Cosa Nostra,
was only a street guy.
La Cosa Nostra takes taking life seriously. That's the reason why you have to go to the commission and ask before you hit somebody. You know,
well, most of it's
actually they take it seriously. You know, and to me, it's like you go down to Texas where you always hear all these good old boys and Texas justice and all this stuff, and you think of this as pure Americana. You go down there and this is what justice means, really? You know, I'm like, I'm a Texan. I haven't been to Texas in a while. I wouldn't really fit in with my fedora and my stilettos, but
for Sinova, I took the Yankee hat off today. And
thank you.
Which I am very appreciated that she invited me on, and I hope that I'm on future ones, because this is a lane I would love to be in to help. I wore my fedora.
All right. Yes. Got to bring the fedora on. So keep posted here. I'm going to edit this and throw in some extra video, some picture contents and stuff, so you can see who we're talking about. I think, Hoodoo, you said you were going to share it too.
As well.
Hopefully we can make a difference for this family, and just be compassionate, you know, with your comments. I don't care what you think about me, what you think about Hoodoo, what you think about the case. Just remember that this is being watched by and listened to, because it's going to be a podcast. This is, I work with the victim's family. And so don't say anything in the comments you wouldn't say to this poor woman's daughter. Okay. All right. So thank you so much. I will see you in the next episode.
Stay up. Thank you.
All right. So I shut the recording off. Was that okay? Did you like that? Do you enjoy?